The name Fruithof is a pretty iconic one in American transportation history. It was 1914 when a Detroit blacksmith named August Fruithof came up with a creative way to help lumber barons haul even more lumber and make even more money. The result became the semi-trailer, and its descendants can be seen to this day rumbling across the highways of the world.
The state of Michigan.
Ensuring quality products today.
Ruth Ann Fruithof is August's granddaughter. She marked the 100th anniversary of August's semi-trailer with a coffee table book that's called Singing Wheels, August Fruithof and the History of the Fruithof Trailer Company. Good to have you with us, Ruth Ann.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Tell us how this first semi-trailer came to be.
August and his partner Otto Newman were shoeing horses and also repairing wagons. One of their customers, Frederick Sibley, came to them with a challenge. He had a new Model T and he wanted to transport a boat to his lake house. And he didn't want to go by horse and buggy, which of course would have taken several days. And he challenged my grandfather to come up with a solution. And after several days, they had removed the back seat of the Model T in order to accommodate the front of the wagon and created the first fifth wheel coupling. And it worked beautifully. And Henry Ford canceled the warranty on the Model T.
So Henry Ford was not especially impressed with what they'd done to his Tin Lizzy, was he?
No, he was not.
And then how did that idea of giving Mr. Sibley a chance to take his boat to his lake house turn into something that really became useful in industry?
Frederick Sibley was one of the most prominent lumber merchants in the Detroit area. And at that time, it was a huge building boom. So you can imagine he had a lot of prestige and power and a huge thriving business. He converted all of his wagons into Model Ts combined with Fruithof semi-trailers. And bingo, the industry was launched. They quickly adapted it was a 24-foot semi-trailer, and they quickly adapted that to something that was much larger. And then eventually they developed the enclosed freight van. But it worked great for lumber, you know, using a flatbed trailer. And then eventually when other industries caught on and adapted it and the practicality of the semi-trailer became obvious, you know, the milk industry, any sort of manufacturer would have used the trailers.
And how long did it take for that early version to grow up into what we know today as you know, the big semi-trailer being pulled along by the big trucks?
It took about 4 years, Cynthia. It's interesting because one of the Fruithof representatives attended in 1919, after World War I, a trucking convention in Cincinnati, Ohio. And the concept of the semi-trailer at that convention was made the laughing stock. They were all, you know, guffawing and ridiculing the concept. And the Fruithof representative came back to Detroit with his tail between his legs. But the next year, they hit the million-dollar sales mark. You know, obviously, history is proving that they were on the right side of the coin.
And for the large part of the 20th century, Fruithof led the way, didn't it?
Yes, they were dominant in the semi-trailer market. And I think that my grandfather's motto was always, the customer was always right. And to satisfy the customer, they were specialists in customizing semi-trailers for their merchants. So if you were a heavy road builder, for example, they then created something called a lowboy or a low-level carryall. So these huge pieces of equipment could be transported. They created lightweight, low-level carryalls for the bakery industry. They created, this is sort of a neat anecdote, they converted a dry van into a tanker for Quaker Oats, which was a huge customer right away from their Des Moines branch. The first branch was Chicago, and then the next one was Des Moines. And from that tanker that was used for bulk food products, then they converted that into something that could carry petroleum products. So all of those innovations were Fruithof. Every truck and trailer that we all curse at going down the highway is as a debt of gratitude to my grandfather and Otto Newman's inventions.
And your grandfather's invention played a big part in the war effort in World War II, didn't it?
That's exactly right. In World War I also, some historians have shown research that my grandfather invented a semi-truck cab to go along with his semi-trailer for use in World War I. And there was a
for troop transport or transporting war materiel or.
Yes, for both. Mm-hmm. For troop transport, I mean, we see those, you know, in MASH, for example, the TV program. Also transporting ammunition, foodstuffs, you know, anything that they needed. There was a big convoy in 1917 when the United States entered World War I from Detroit that was originally organized by Henry Ford to supply troops and equipment for transportation overseas for World War I. And my grandfather was involved in that convoy.
So the company grew, and certainly through the 1930s, it had a rather tempestuous relationship with the union, even to the point of having Pinkerton detectives hired to kind of infiltrate the ranks. How did that come to be, and how did that work out?
My uncle took charge of the company after my grandfather retired in 1930, and he was at the helm of the company, Harvey Fruhoff, until 1949. He was extremely anti-union. And he engaged in many tactics to break union activities that, you know, are not uncommon. We read about in historical anecdotes. He ended up getting caught for violation of the Wagner Act. And he had hired Pinkerton guards to disguise themselves as employees, infiltrated the ranks of the workers, and then reported back to the company executives. And those union leaders were dismissed from their posts. The federal law enforcement agents came in and discovered what had happened, and those employees were rehired and given back their positions.
So when he was caught, is that when did your father then step in and he began running the company, or did your father never run the company?
No, my father didn't take over until Harvey retired in 1949, and my father was at the company until the early 60s, and he died in 65. I think history would have been very different had my father not died an early death.
How so?
Well, once family were no longer involved, you had executives who were interested in serving themselves and not necessarily interested in doing what was right for the company. And I think a family member would have made the sacrifices necessary. Maybe they would be financial sacrifices or whatever you needed to do to keep the company alive. And that certainly didn't happen in the 90s when the company, you know, started going downhill. They had suffered from a raider from New York had seen the company as vulnerable and that stock was undervalued, which is typically what happens, came in with a corporate raid. And in order to protect themselves, they brought in Merrill Lynch with very, very expensive fees, and they bought all the public stock back into private hands. And they took on a huge amount of debt in the process. And they just couldn't sustain it. The economy was pretty, you know, had plateaued. There was not a whole lot of growth at that time in the economy. And they started selling off their crown jewels, like Kelsey Hayes, a brake company, and Propar, the parts company. And without those companies that were bringing in a lot of revenue, they just couldn't sustain it.
So what's the status of the company today?
Well, the company was bought in bankruptcy by a larger company called Wabash in 1997. The international divisions were given an opportunity to buy themselves out, which they all did. So you have Fruhoff trailers and shipping containers being manufactured around the world under the brand name. I've reached out to all the companies, and they're very excited about the book. Nippon Fruhoff, for example, has all of my historical information on their website in Japanese. It's kind of fun to see. And Fruhoff France, and there's a New Zealand branch, South Africa, UK. It's very much alive.
And for you to, let's just say, travel in France and be driving along and seeing that truck go by and there's your name on that truck, that has to be pretty amazing. What led you to take this deep dive into your family's history?
It is a thrill sometimes to see my name on the back of a truck. I feel like I'm in on a personal private secret. My father died when I was only 8, so I think that it's been sort of a lifelong yearning to get to know him as a man. And when my mother died in 1997, I found about 40 boxes of my father's office archives stored in her attic. And going through those boxes was a bit of a challenge. I mean, you never knew if you were going to pull out a letter from a president or a court records from, you know, a federal indictment. And it took a while for me to get up the personal gumption to, you know, get his FBI file and really read all those things and really discover who he was as a man, warts and all. And it's been so rewarding in many ways. I feel that my emotional conviction that my father was a great guy has been confirmed. I know him better as a man. I know his accomplishments that he achieved. Fruithof never gets credit for creating the shipping container, and that was a Fruithof initiative under my dad's era. And originally they had done that for the military in 1945 in World War II and then in the Korean War. Mm. They were used for radar. They would mount radar units on the top of trailers and also these containers. So it's been so great for me to discover who my father was as a man. And the company was sort of like the best kept secret. You know, everyone in the industry knows Fruithof, knows the brand name. And over and over and over again, I hear these incredible stories from drivers who tell me how great it was to pull a Fruithof trailer, or companies that in fact still have them on the road and refurbish them so that they can continue to use them. It's been remarkable.
And a company that kept its Michigan identity from the beginning to the end.
That's exactly right. They did have 16 plants around the country, but they were big Michigan and downtown Detroit. At one point, they were invited to move to Troy, like the rest of Detroit mm-hmm. companies, and they declined. They stayed downtown on Harper Avenue between Conner and French. And that location is occupied by a great company, PVC Chemicals. I had a chance to tour the plant, see my dad's old office, and they have some remnants of the Fruithof days there. So that was a lot of fun.
It really is a sterling example, your grandfather August's ideas and the company, of what an entrepreneur can do with a smart idea.
That's exactly right. And also serving their customer. All of their inventions were courtesy of their customer. That was really their big motto.
The book is Singing Wheels, August Fruithof and the History of the Fruithof Trailer Company, put together by Ruth Ann Fruithof and Darlene Norman. And we should let you know that there is going to be at the Detroit Historical Museum an exhibition opening June 6th in the Motor City Showcase, Fruithof, the First Name in Transportation. Thank you so much for sharing your family story with us.
What a pleasure, Cynthia. Thank you.